Hi, this is the voice, Michael Shavello. You're listening to the Premium Oddscast, hosted by leading MMA odds maker Nick Kalikas, fight scientist and author of Fightnomics, Reid Kuhn, and MMA journalist Brian Heminger. The absolute best UFC betting info, picks, statistics, and analysis from the most respected authority in mixed martial arts betting, MMAOddsBreaker.com.
Welcome to the Premium Oddscast, presented by Five Dime Sportsbook. I'm Brian Heminger, joined today by leading mixed martial arts oddsmaker Nick Kalikas to break down this Saturday's UFC 214 event, which takes place in Anaheim, California. If you're unfamiliar with our format, myself and Nick will break down the fight card from top to bottom, providing extensive analysis and a pick for each fight after doing our film study for the event. Looking back at our last event, we won 5.15 units overall for UFC on Fox 25 after going 2-0 on our premium bets. We also lost our 1-unit free bet on John Volante by TKO prop. Back to the present, UFC 214 features a 12-fight card in total and will be aired on UFC Fight Pass, FXX, and pay-per-view this Saturday night. Let's dive right in. Now, kicking things off on Fight Pass is a lightweight contest between Joshua Berkman, who is 29-15 with 1 no contest, and he's taking on Drew Dober, who is 17-8 with 1 no contest. Now, Nick, where did you open this fight, and how has the public shifted things so far?
I opened Dober minus 165, the comeback on Berkman at plus 125, and that's at our featured sportsbook, fivedimes.eu. Currently at Five Dimes, it's Dober minus 360, the comeback on Berkman at plus 300. So needless to say, more action, more support coming in Dober's way. Not a lot of confidence right now going in towards Berkman. I understand. I mean, the guy's been around for a long time. If you look at his last fight, he just got destroyed by Prezeris early on in that fight. I mean, he got choked out fairly quickly. Prezeris is a beast, though. I mean, I think that guy is severely underrated, and he just went out there and had an amazing night over a very solid and tough competitor in Berkman. But of course, Berkman now age 36. Beyond that, in fight years, he just hasn't looked that great. I mean, he had a split decision, a close competitive fight to Otto before that. He lost to Felder before that. So he's been on a little funk, and it doesn't seem like he's going to probably get where he wants to be in the UFC at this point of his career, which is a shame because, man, I'll tell you what, if this was not too long ago, maybe a year and a half, 2 years ago, for sure, Berkman would be favored over Dober. But right now, as we stand, Dober definitely gets a little bit more respect. I think he is the younger, fresher fighter. Obviously, he's 28 years old now. I mean, in MMA years, he's a little bit beyond that as well because Dober's been around for a while, even though he's still fairly young. And skill-wise, they match up fairly decent with each other because they're both well-rounded. I mean, they're definitely both guys that could do some damage on the feet. They have good wrestling. They can beat you on the ground as well. So a lot of skill on both ends of this fight, definitely. So it's going to come down to who makes, I think, the least amount of mistakes, who has the better chin at this point, and who's going to push that pace and be a little bit more relentless. And I think that is probably Dober. So as far as a pure pick goes, I understand it. Again, younger, fresher fighter and Dober. I mean, when the skill sets are similar, you got to kind of lean that way. But I don't know. I don't think it should be where the line is right now. I mean, let's not forget that Berkman, even though he just did get destroyed in his last fight, he's still been fairly competitive in some of his other fights as well. And Dober, if I have anything negative to say about him, is, man, his fight IQ sometimes, it just kills you. I mean, it really does, because the guy does have some speed and power on the feet. He's got some wrestling. Like I said, he's got the total package, but at times his defense on the feet lets you down. His IQ lets you down. So that's what you got to be concerned about. And I think if this fight does somehow make it to the scorecards, it'll be interesting, to say the least, on the card. So not as confident as everybody else out there laying 3-1 over Berkman because he's done and he shouldn't really win this fight. But I am going to pick Dober to win this fight, even though I'm not as confident as everybody else out there. So I do think it's Dober's fight to win or lose. Unfortunately for Berkman, his losing streak probably continues, and this might be the last time we see him in the UFC. But again, as a bettor out there, I would stay away from this. There's no value at this point on Drew Dober. Don't lay it. Stay away from it. It's a dog or pass situation at this point. I don't know if you really want to put your money on Berkman either. So from a betting perspective, it's too late if you didn't get on early. Stay away from this fight and just watch it and hopefully enjoy it. But my pick is going to be Drew Dober to win.
Josh Berkman has had kind of a meteoric rise and fall. I mean, he rose to fame with this big career resurgence that you know, ended with a victory over John Fitch when John Fitch was still relevant. And, you know, he just has not had a good run thus far in his UFC, you know, comeback. A dropping down to lightweight hasn't really helped him as much as he would have liked. He lost his first two fights after coming back, dropped down first three fights, then dropped down to lightweight, won that one, and now he's lost three in a row again. And I'm definitely concerned. I mean, yeah, he's got some talent. He can still hit hard. He's got a decent guillotine choke, but he's on the wrong side of 30. He's 37 years old now. He's taken a lot of damage, and I think that, you know, his best days are clearly behind him. Now, Drew Dober, on the other hand, he's continued to add more parts to his game, although he's, you know, flawed as well. Dober is a pretty solid overall striker. He has pushes a good pace, and his wrestling has actually improved dramatically in his UFC career. It helped him get a victory over Scott Holtzman, and then he goes out and showcased some good stand-up in that recent victory over Jason Gonzalez. But, you know, he's not an elite striker, as evidenced by his last fight when Aubin Mercier, who is not known for his stand-up, was actually able to outwork him on the feet and then eventually submit him. So, that being said, these guys clearly are still moving. I still think Dober has room for growth. I mean, he's just 28 years old, and while Berkman should be a little bit bigger, a little bit longer, a little bit taller, I think Dober makes up for the size deficiency with speed, youth, athleticism, and just being able to push a little harder in fights. So I like Dober to win. I don't agree with the line movement either, but I do think that, you know, you flip a coin, he should clearly win this fight. So my pick is going to be Drew Dober. Now, dropping down to the flyweight division, we have Eric Shelton, who is 10-3, taking on UFC newcomer Jared Brooks, who is 12-0. Now, Nick, what's the MMA oddsmaker's perspective on this one?
What a great fight. I open this fight minus 150 for Brooks, the comeback on Shelton at plus 110. Line margins have tightened up a little bit, but right now it's Brooks minus 155, the comeback on Shelton plus 135. So two action definitely coming in on this fight, a little bit more so towards Brooks, and I was kind of expecting that. I mean, he's definitely the more popular fighter of the two. Both of these guys, I'm actually disappointed in a way that they got matched up against each other, because I think these are both future flyweight contenders, without a doubt. I mean, both of them are so skilled that I think if the UFC kind of separated them and kept them on separate tracks, they would have eventually met, but probably for maybe a shot at a title, potentially at one point, or, you know, number one contenders type of matchup. That's how good these guys both are. So that's why I'm a little bit disappointed. Now, not to say that this fight won't be great, because it will be. I mean, you have, again, you want to talk about two complete fighters. You got it here. I mean, these guys can do it all. They have really good wrestling. Both of them do. They have really good stand-up skill as well, submission game to go along with it. So there's not many weaknesses in either's game right now. I think the hype, again, is a little bit more on Brooks. I mean, he's been the one that is outspoken. He's been the one that a lot of people believe. He was supposed to fight Ian McCall. I think it was a UFC 208. And a lot of people, including myself, believe that he probably would have won that fight. And we all know how much respect McCall carries in the flyweight division. So that's what you get in a guy like Brooks. I mean, again, explosive athlete, without a doubt. He's got some speed. He's got some power. He's got some good fight IQ. I mean, across the board, the guy is a very, very solid fighter. And you could say a lot of the same things about Shelton as well. But again, I get the popularity aspect of it, and I guess the smack talk and all that social media buzz and all that stuff. Brooks definitely has him edged out, though, as far as in that regard. But we're talking about fighting here. And in the cage, Shelton's going to give Brooks everything he can handle and more. I think this is probably going to be one of Brooks' toughest opponents that he's ever faced in regards to Shelton. So that's how much I have as far as respect goes for Eric Shelton as well. I know he's coming off of a very close competitive loss to Pantoja, but we've seen Pantoja is legit as well. He's one of the best flyweights out there in the world. And, I mean, that was a very, very close fight. You have three different judges sitting there. They could have possibly scored it for Shelton. So Shelton is top of the food chain when it comes to the flyweights as well. I think here he's going to be a little bit bigger than Brooks. He's going to have a slight reach advantage. I think as far as power aspect goes, I think Shelton has a slight edge there as well. So this is definitely going to be interesting. I think Brooks has him in the speed advantage as far as anything goes here. If there's any advantages to separate the two at all, this is what I'm saying here. But as far as complete fight goes, I think this fight's going to take place everywhere. And I think Shelton's actually going to be the harder hitter on the feet. I think he's going to be a little bit more of the grinder, the control of the kind of tempo of the fight. Fighter here as well. So he'll be the one pushing a little bit higher pace, I think, and he'll be controlling as the fight goes on and progresses a little bit more as well. I think I trust Shelton's cardio just a tad bit better. Not that Brooks has bad cardio, but I think from what I've seen thus far, I trust Shelton a little bit in that regard as well. So for me, as you guys could probably tell, I'm actually leaning a little bit more towards Shelton in this fight, and I have all sorts of respect for Brooks. So that's, like I said, this is how much I'm looking forward to this fight. I think this is by far one of the best fights on this card, and this card is stacked. So starting off the night with the second fight in with a fight like this is just remarkable. And I'm going to lean towards Shelton. I mean, I think it's a dog or pass situation here. I think people are probably underestimating Shelton just a little bit. And I think he's the type of fighter that kind of makes leaps and bounds as far as improvement goes between fights. So I've seen the progress since he's been off the Ultimate Fighter, since he's been on the Ultimate Fighter, actually. You could tell how good the kid was there. But after he got off the Ultimate Fighter as well, I think he's progressed even more so, and I think the sky's the limit for him as well. So both these guys, again, I expect them possibly to meet down the road again at some point, but these are two flyweights you definitely want to keep your eye on, and I'm glad they're going to scrap here, even if I don't want him kind of to fight this early. So my pick is going to be Shelton. I think he does pull off a close, competitive, split decision probably type of decision win over Brooks, and I think that's the way that it kind of plays out. We'll see how it goes, but Shelton's a pick.
That being said, Eric Shelton will make up for Brooks's physicality with a bit of a physical advantage with some longer height, some longer reach. And if he can use those, he might be able to do some damage. Shelton hits pretty hard in the flyweight division, and Brooks has had a bit of a bad history against power punchers. He's had some trouble against guys that hit hard, and he's not the best with his striking defense. So while I think Brooks will push the higher tempo on the feet, and I think he'll be more aggressive, he will be putting himself in a position to eat some heavy shots. And if Shelton can land something nasty, then Brooks could get himself in trouble. Shelton also has some decent wrestling ability, so I don't know if Brooks will be able to really screw around with him a ton on the ground either. Brooks does have some sneaky submission ability, but Shelton, I mean, he had a UFC debut that was razor close against Alex Pantoja, and Pantoja is a brilliant ground fighter, and Shelton wasn't able to get finished there. So I don't see Brooks, you know, getting anything crazy going on the ground either. I mean, honestly, the way Brooks wins this fight is if he just stays in Shelton's face on the feet, forces him to fight off of his back foot during stand-up exchanges, and then also kind of shoves Shelton into the fence when he needs to break and kind of wins the octagon control portion of the game. So that's how I picture Jared Brooks winning. Shelton, for him, he needs to land those heavy shots and then maybe get something going on the ground. He might be able to win some ground scrambles, I don't know, but I think testing Brooks on the ground, maybe forcing him to fight off his back if possible. Those are the kind of the ways Shelton can win. Shelton is super talented and very criminally underrated, but I do favor Brooks, and I'm going to side with him, although I'm definitely nervous about it. But my pick is going to be Jared Brooks. Now, moving on to the Fight Pass headliner, we have a women's strawweight bout between Kaylin Curran, who is 4-4, and Alexandra Albu, who is 6-0. Now, Nick, where did you open this fight, and how has the public shifted things so far?
I open Albu -150, the comeback on Curran at +110. Right now, looking over five dimes, Albu is -165, Curran is +145. Amazing how fast people jump off the bandwagon. I mean, Curran was an ultra popular fighter, and now with her obviously losing a few fights, people are starting to wisen up and thinking, hey, maybe she's not as good as we all thought. And unfortunately for her, she's not. I mean, she has a ton of potential. You can see it. But her fight IQ, her conditioning overall, I mean, her defense has just been a huge, huge disappointment and letdown. So I don't know. I don't expect too much to come from Curran. I mean, moving forward in this division, especially if she loses here to Albu. I mean, I could easily see Curran being released from the UFC if she doesn't win this fight. And Albu is the more popular fighter right now as it stands. And obviously she's coming off of an impressive win. I mean, you could still see a lot of things wrong with Albu's game, and she's developing as well, but she's definitely on the right track. And her submission win in her last fight, I think, was fairly impressive. I mean, it was good timing with it. It was smart fight IQ to go along with it as well. She ended up getting the choke in the second round there of her fight. So I think Albu has a little bit more finishing capabilities. I think she has a little bit better fight IQ, and her conditioning is probably a little bit better than Curran as well. I think Curran's only shot at winning this fight is probably making it a tough, grueling three-round kind of war with her getting a little bit of top position on the ground without getting caught in anything. And that type of fight, I think, is Curran's best path to victory here against Albu. But I don't know. I don't see it. I think Albu eventually catches her, probably by submission along the way. I just don't have that much confidence in Curran's submission defense these days, her defense overall as a whole. I know, again, she didn't get finished in her last fight, Curran didn't, and she fought a very tough opponent in Moyle, but I still think that she's going to probably make a mistake along the way here and get caught by Albu. So my official pick is Albu, but I got to be honest with you here. I think both these ladies are still so raw that you can't even really trust either one of them. I mean, they make too many mistakes. So this is another fight that I would stay away from. I wouldn't recommend betting, but as a pick, from what we've seen recently, I think there's more upside to Albu, and I think you kind of have to lean her way.
Kaylin Curran kind of reminds me of a joking poker term. You know, people get ace king and they call it Anna Kournikova because it looks good but never wins. And that's kind of what's happening with Kaylin Curran. I mean, she's pretty, she's young, but man, she just doesn't have that it factor that helps you go over the edge when you just need to dig deep and get a win when, you know, it could just come down to the next big thing. Curran has a bit of ability to strike. She has a bit of submission ability, but overall, like, everything about her just is a bit of a letdown. Now, Albu is raw. We've only seen her one time in the octagon, and that was over 2 years ago. She's kind of been focusing on her education and training. That was also something, I mean, the UFC signed her and she didn't fight for 2 years after they signed her. So she's been very dedicated to like finishing up like some other stuff that was important to her before she like really started focusing on her MMA career. But she's 27 now. I think all that stuff's finally finished and she's been training extremely hard heading into this fight. And I think that she's going to look pretty good. I mean, Albu has some decent striking ability. She's has some decent submission ability. She's aggressive. She's very physically strong. She's in extremely good shape. And with the way that Kaylin Curran kind of wilts when she gets hit hard, the way that she just succumbs to submission after submission when people put her in bad positions, I just don't really see how Curran's going to win this fight. Like, even though Albu's not the most refined fighter, I think Albu has probably added a lot to her game since the last time we saw her, and she looked pretty good the last time we saw her. So if she's an improvement upon what we saw last time, then that version of Albu should have no problem against Kaylin Curran. It's just, you got to put Curran in a bad position, get a submission on, and she'll probably tap out. So I think Alexandru Albu wins by finish, so she'll be my pick. Now, moving up to the featherweight division for the first bout on the FXX prelims, we have Andre Feely, who is 16-4, taking on Calvin Kattar, who is 16-2. Now, Nick, what's the MMA oddsmaker's perspective on this one?
Up in Feely -310, the comeback in Kattar at +230. Right now looking over five dimes. It is currently Feely -380, the comeback in Kattar at +315. So more support coming in Feely's way. A lot of unknown factors with Kattar, especially I think out there in the betting community. He is coming in on short notice, replacing the Korean Superboy. So Feely versus Superboy would have been very fun. I think Kattar versus Feely is going to be very fun as well. But I mean, Kattar is stepping in on short notice, and that's why the odds are somewhat this high as well. I mean, stylistically, this is a tough matchup for Kattar anyway, because I think Feely basically edges him out in a lot of areas. But overall, I mean, you got to say Katar's actually a pretty talented fighter. I mean, he's a well-rounded veteran, nice boxing. He pushes forward, throwing with some power in both hands, really. His kicking game is decent as well. But he does have a bit of a wild aggression on the feet, and that does lead to some problems on the feet once in a while as well. But he's got a pretty solid chin. But I'm saying his wild aggression can lead to some openings, maybe possibly on the ground. And like I said, he's hittable on the feet as well with that, but he could do some damage, and his aggression has power that goes along with it. And most of the time it could be effective. So I think overall he's got a pretty solid game, and I think he's going to give Feely everything that he can handle. And Feely has to be careful. He cannot take this guy lightly. He cannot take his power lightly on the feet. He's got a wrestling game as well. So if Feely spends too much time on his back, he's going to be in trouble here as well. But I don't think that's going to happen. I think Feely's going to be a step ahead of him. I think Feely's conditioning is going to be a little bit better as well. That's one thing I've noticed early on in studying Qatar's film. He does tend to fade as the fight progresses a little bit, and that's not a good thing, especially making your UFC debut on short notice. So you're seeing Feely as a solid favorite for a pretty decent reason. I mean, again, he's had a full training camp for this fight. He is a well-rounded fighter as well. Even though they both have a lot of similarities in their game, Feely is just going to be a step ahead of him along the way, and his conditioning should be better as well. So this fight is Feely's fight to win or lose. I think he does come away with the win. But again, at the betting window, I don't see anything here worth playing, so you guys should probably stay away and just enjoy the fight. It should be pretty fun. Like I said, Qatar is no slouch, and this line is, if anything, a bit high. I think it should be a little bit lower, but with all the circumstances that I just said, I understand why it's sitting at almost 4-1. So Feely's the pick.
Kelvin Qatar's nickname is the Boston Finisher, but he hasn't finished a guy in his last six fights. He's gone to decision each time. And that, granted, that nickname was given to him after, I think, he had 9 stoppages in his first 9 fights. Now, in his defense, Qatar has won all 6 of those decisions, so he's got that going for him. But I think this is a major, major step up for him in competition level. Andre Feely is no joke. I mean, this guy trains out of Team Alpha Male. He has pretty good wrestling. He has heavy hands. He has a well-rounded striking game with good kicks and knees. I mean, he can be downright ferocious, especially when he faces people that are not elite. Now, when he steps in there against, you know, Max Holloway, or, you know, that's when he can get himself in a little bit of trouble. But against the middle tier, and even, and especially lower tier featherweights in the UFC, Feely just feasts on those guys. And while I do think Qatar has some potential, I mean, the guy is a decent striker. He has overall a pretty good game in terms of well-roundedness with wrestling, takedowns, you name it. I just don't think there's any one specific quality to his game that is actually better than Feely's. The only thing maybe is chin strength. Feely, you know, has been knocked out. He has been rocked in fights. But, I mean, Qatar's gone to decision 6 times in a row. Now that once he stepped up his competition level, those finishes got a lot tougher. And this is now the toughest opponent of his career. So for him to have to probably win by knockout when he hasn't been able to win by knockout against opponents that were significantly lower level than Feely, I think it's going to be a tough and tall task for Qatar. So especially with him stepping in on short notice, I think Andre Feely should breeze through this fight. I wouldn't be shocked to see Feely get a finish at some point. So my pick is going to be Andre Feely. Now, sticking with the featherweight division, we have Renato Moicano, who is 10-0-1, taking on Brian Ortega, who is 11-0 with 1 no contest. Now, Nick, where did you open this fight, and how has the public shifted things so far?
I put Moicano -180 to come back in Ortega at +140. Right now, looking over 5 dimes, it's Moicano -150 to come back in Ortega at +130. So line margins have tightened up. There is two-way action coming in on this fight as well, but more action early on did come in Ortega's way. I was kind of expecting it, to be honest with you. I know Ortega is a little bit more popular, deservingly so. I mean, the guy always puts on a great performance. You know what you get with Ortega as far as finishing ability. Man, the guy is special on the ground. I mean, so slick with his jiu-jitsu, but not just that. I mean, the guy has shown that his stand-up game is nothing to laugh about either, and he's faced some solid competition so far in the featherweight division, and he's just done all right. So a lot of good things to like about Ortega. He's only 26 years old, and he's improving. I mean, really, the guy is a very, very talented prospect at 145 pounds. And again, at age 26, he's got a long way to go. I think he's only going to get better and better. I opened Moicano the favorite over him, a solid favorite, because I think stylistically this is a bad matchup for Ortega, though. I think Ortega almost needs a finish to beat Moicano in this spot here, because I think Moicano overall is the better striker. Again, Ortega does mix things up well on the feet. He's more well known for his grappling skills, of course, as I just mentioned, Ortega is. But even on the feet, he's okay. He's got a diverse striking attack, and it's not bad. But Moicano, I think, is the harder, more devastating puncher. I think he just has more power even in his kicking game across the board. I think his clinch is a little bit stronger as well. And then when it comes to the ground game, Moicano, his jiu-jitsu and his defense jiu-jitsu, BJJD is great as well. So offensively and defensively, I think he is no slouch on the ground either. So I don't think he gets caught up in Ortega's sub game. And I think if it does hit the ground, he's going to be the one that spends more time on top, and he's going to be the one more in control. And his wrestling is a little bit better, I think, than Ortega's as well. So in my opinion, I think Moicano has the wrestling advantage over Ortega. I think he's got the striking advantage over Ortega as well. And then the jiu-jitsu, the pure submission advantage, I think Ortega's a little bit more slick with the submission skill, but Moicano can hang with him on the ground as well in that regard. So I think it's really his fight to win or lose here. And I think if it does hit the scorecards, Moicano wins. I think if there's going to be a finish here, I could see it realistically going either way, but I wouldn't be surprised if Moicano is the first to stop Ortega either as it progresses a little bit. Now, I think that is Ortega's only path to victory. So if you want to throw some money on Ortega, I think you go, you kind of take him by sub or inside the distance, honestly, more so than anything else. But I wouldn't really recommend that. I think Moicano is going to win this fight, so I'm going to pick him to win. And I just think another serious prospect you got to talk about. I mean, age 28, so he's getting up there a little bit. I mean, he's still a young gun, don't get me wrong, but I'm talking about actual prospect age-wise. I mean, he's definitely getting to that point where, I mean, he's going to be 30 years old soon. So in that regard, he's not a young gun, but still, I think he's in his prime right now of his career. He's getting better as far as skill set goes, confidence-wise. I mean, that was a really, really good win over Jeremy Stephens in his last fight. A lot of people weren't expecting him to perform as well as he did, and we all know how dangerous Stephens can be. So Moicano looked good on the feet. His takedowns look good, everything across the board. And I think, honestly, this is kind of a step down for Moicano, where for Ortega, I know he's been fighting some good competition, but I think he's in a little bit more than he can handle in this fight against Moicano. So I am fairly confident Moicano gets it done here, and I'm going to pick him to win. And I think, if anything, it's a favored or pass situation with Moicano in this spot. So Moicano is my pick.
And I really like Moicano as well. I mean, Moicano has really just kind of burst onto the scene and looked really sharp thus far in his UFC career. Most notably was that last performance over Jeremy Stephens, where he was just able to use that length really well. He was able to pick up a couple takedowns. Now, granted, it wasn't like a commanding, dominant victory. It was a split decision. But the fact that he's picked up split decisions over Tukhugov and Stephens in back-to-back fights is super impressive. I mean, those are quality, quality wins. And Moicano does have just a strong, well-rounded game. He fights long. He's, you know, difficult to deal with in the stand-up portion. And then on the ground, he's elite. He just has sensational ability to grapple and scramble and get submissions. Now, Ortega is a strong grappler, and he does have some power. Like, he's finished two fights by knockout, once with ground and pound, one with a heavy knee against Clay Guida. But I just don't think Ortega is going to be able to utilize his strengths against Moicano. Ortega is good on the ground, but if it goes to the ground, I think Moicano wins ground exchanges. I think Moicano wins scrambles, gets top position. And I don't think Moicano gets submitted. Like, Ortega's had two fights now in a row that he was losing relatively badly, that he was able to come back and win in the third round. Now, Moicano hasn't really shown any kind of conditioning problems, like major, so I don't see Ortega coming back strong late in this fight either. Like, I agree with Nick, I don't really see a lot of ways for Ortega to win, barring, you know, landing a crazy knee like he did against Clay Guida. Like, maybe Moicano, you know, sells out for a takedown and just stoops right into one. But overall, I mean, Ortega just has the type of game where he's willing to lose for a while to try to find a way to win. And if he does that against Moicano, the way to win is not going to materialize. And I think he just loses. So I like Moicano. I think he wins decisively. whether it's decision or maybe even a finish. But my pick is going to be Moicano. Now, dropping down for a 140-pound catchweight fight, we have Aljamain Sterling, who is 13-2, taking on Hanan Barrow, the former bantamweight champ, who is 35-4 with one no contest. Now, Nick, what's the MMA oddsmaker's perspective on this one?
Up in Barrow, minus 130. The comeback on Sterling, minus 110. So virtually a pick'em with a slight lean towards Barrow. Right now, it's Sterling minus 135. The comeback on Barrow is at plus 115. So virtually a pick'em with a slight lean towards Sterling. That's the way the action has come in early on in this fight. I get it. I mean, a lot of people, I think Sterling is definitely the fan favorite in most cases, and he's got the right attitude. I mean, it's funny because, I mean, it's almost a love-hate thing. So the fans that do like Sterling really like him, and there's, of course, the fan base that maybe don't like his attitude or something like that, you know, are against him. But overall, he's definitely been picking up a lot of attention, a lot of hype along the way so far in his UFC career. So he's basically on the upswing is what I'm trying to spit out here. And Barrow, unfortunately for him, I mean, not long ago, he was on the pound-for-pound top fighters in the world list. Now he's not getting that respect, I mean, from the overall MMA community. I mean, people could see that the guy is definitely not the same fighter he once was when he was in his prime. And that's a shame because before those Dillashaw fights, I mean, he was really up there. A lot of people thought that he might have been the best number one pound-for-pound fighter in the world. Just a complete game everywhere the fight takes place, striking, his submission ability, his takedown defense, his wrestling, everything about Barrow. He's a complete fighter, and he's a finisher. I mean, he can beat you at any aspect of the game usually. But now we're starting to see some flaws in his game. He's hittable. He's been knocked out. He's been finished before, obviously. His cardio is starting to be a little bit more suspect. I'm not sure what exactly is going on with Barrow, but you can see that he's been struggling. Even in his wins, he hasn't looked really that good. Now, he did bounce back in his last fight against Nover, and he looked okay, especially in round two after he started catching his groove a little bit in round one. Round two, he picked it up a little bit, but you could still see some spots where he started slowing down as the fight progressed as well. So that's something that you definitely have to be cautious about in regards to Barrow. So I think anytime you see a five-round fight with him in it, you got to definitely take that in consideration. Here, this is a three-round fight. I think that Barrow will kind of gas as it goes on, of course, as well, because Sterling is going to be a tough, tough test. But I think he's still capable of pulling out two out of three rounds here against a guy like Sterling. And I think the reason being is because he's the better striker still. If you look at Sterling, I mean, he has a complete game in his own right. But on the feet at times, he just looks a little bit too uncomfortable to me. He doesn't look as smooth. He doesn't look as sharp as you want him to. I think he swings a little bit wide still with his punching. I mean, he could definitely improve his stand-up game a little bit more so. Now, he does pack a punch. He's got good timing. He's got good countering ability. He has the ability to finish you on the feet. But I think for Sterling, where it's at is he's a complete MMA fighter. But I think he needs to get the fight to the ground a little bit more so, work his grappling ability as well, and that's where he has an advantage over most fighters. But he does put everything together well, even though he doesn't – if you look at his striking, it doesn't seem like it's that great. It's still effective. And against a guy that I want to say – I don't want to really say aging because he's only 30 years old, but against a Barrow that's probably on the decline and not – definitely not in his peak form right now, Sterling might even have success on the feet if he lands a couple big shots. But – overall, I just find it a tough stylistic matchup for Sterling. And I know why the UFC is kind of making this, in my opinion. I think they're making it for Sterling to catch a big win over a proven champion, former champion like Barrow. And that definitely excels his career to another level. And it's possible he gets it. I mean, I'm a fan of Sterling. I like the guy. I think he's a tremendous fighter, has a lot of ability, a lot of upside, and he's going to only improve and get better and probably gets a title shot one day. So that's how good this kid is. But I think here against Barrow, I mean, every area that you look at it, is Sterling the better wrestler? Possibly. I think Barrow's tough to take down. And if you do take him down, he bounces back up rather quickly. And if you do get him to the ground, you got to deal with his guard game, which is kind of sick as well. So I think Sterling can get a couple takedowns along the way or catches back or something like that. But I don't know how long he could keep him there. So I think this fight probably stays up on the feet more times than not. And if it does, you got to give the slight edge to Barrow still. So that's why I'm going to go his way. I'm going to pick him to win. Not a confident play, because I do think that Sterling gets better fight by fight at times, and you never know. I mean, he could come in here and just torch Barrow and maybe get him out of there quickly, and we're all going to be surprised, or at least I will be. But that being said, I still think you have to use logic here, and looking at their skill set, they match up really well, but Barrow's just the better fighter right now. So Eileen Brow, I think it's going to be a close competitive fight, but it's hard not to pick him against Sterling at this point of his career. If Sterling does get the W though, man, I'll tell you what, he's definitely on the right track. And part of me will be pulling for him, obviously. I mean, I want to win my pick here. As far as a bet goes, I'm staying away from this fight for sure. I think it is a dog or pass situation, I should say. So if the line creeps up, honestly, there's probably value in Brow. So I take that back. I'm not going to for sure stay away from this fight. If the line keeps on creeping up, then there's a play to be made on Brow, honestly, more so than anything. So, but with all that being said, it's dog or pass, but I think it is going to be a close competitive fight. And I actually picked the dog to pull off the upset win. So my pick is going to be Brow.
Aljamain Sterling was once a guy that just had a rocket strapped to him in terms of fan hype, but then the Brian Caraway fight happened and he did not look good. I mean, he looked great in the first round, but then he gassed and Caraway ended up winning the next two rounds. And then the Asuncao fight happened, and Asuncao, I know he can be a bit of a prospect killer. I mean, he's been in there three times against three elite prospects, Pedro Munhoz, Aljamain Sterling, and most recently, Marlon Moraes, and he's been able to walk away with a decision each time. But that being said, you know, Sterling just looked uncomfortable in a back and forth stand up fight. He wasn't able to get any takedowns and he was forced to stand and he was kind of exposed there. So Sterling, his striking game is developing. It's getting better, but I mean, it's still, you know, Phil Davis levels right now. It's just, he's not. He doesn't look super comfortable there. Now, he went back to what worked in his last fight. He got two takedowns against Augusto Mendez, just landed a bunch of ground and pound, won a one-sided decision. He looked great. And if he's going to beat Hayden Barão, it's going to have to be the takedowns that save the day against him, because he's not going to outstrike Hayden Barão. Like, I know Barão has had some issues with his chin, with his conditioning, with his weight cuts, especially now that he wants to apparently come back down to the bantamweight division. But you got to remember, the last time he fought in California, he had the passing out and hitting his head in the bathtub incident that forced him out of the main event the night before the fight, the event. And then, like, Joe Soto had to step in and fight the main event against TJ Dillashaw for the title. Like, it was just a complete disaster. So the California Commission told him he couldn't fight at bantamweight. He had to fight at a 140-pound catchweight. That's why they're doing this. So I think that's actually a good thing for Barão, not having to cut all the way to 135. It helps him a lot more, because he's has to cut more weight typically than most bantamweights. And he should just be the better striker here. He has more power. He has a more diverse skill set. He's definitely much more dangerous with his hands and feet than Sterling. Sterling, it just seems like he's kind of throwing his hands and feet at his opponent, at least at this point in his career. He could eventually put it all together, kind of like Aubin Mercier, who I mentioned earlier, who was a wrestler that has added some decent striking to his game, but it's just not there yet. And I doubt that he's, you know, fine-tuned all those sharp edges just in the break between his last fight and this one. So if Sterling wins this fight, it has to be with his wrestling. And he's also going to have to deal with Barão's elite ground game. But I think Sterling would be good enough to overcome Barão's, you know, submissions and Brazilian jiu-jitsu. It's just, can he get takedowns? Can he keep Barão down? And can he hold his own in the stand-up? And I'm just not quite convinced that he's going to be able to do that. So I'm leaning Hayden Barão. I think he bounces back in his return to at least facing bantamweights. Not in the bantamweight yet, but attempting to get to the bantamweight division. I think Hayden Barão picks up a victory here. So he'll be my pick. Now moving on to the main event of the preliminary card in the featherweight division. We have Ricardo Lamas, who is 17-5, taking on the surging Jason Knight, who is 20-2. Now, Nick, where did you open this fight, and how has the public shifted things so far?
Up in Knight, minus 130, Lamas at minus 110, looking over at Five Dimes right now. It is Knight minus 130, the comeback on Lamas at plus 110. So exactly where I opened it, although early on the action did flip the line. Lamas was favored for a little while. Now we're seeing action obviously back towards Knight, and it's flipped back to the opener. So I think obviously where I opened it was fair. A little bit surprising. I think that's why we saw the early reaction with people coming in on Lamas. thinking that, man, he's a dog tonight. Lamas has been one of the top tier featherweights for a long time. I mean, I've heard the argument already, even on Twitter and whatnot, and people do make a really good case about Lamas being, you know, an underdog or in this position, because he's only lost to top tier fighters. If you think about it recently, he's only lost to Holloway. He's lost to Mendez. He's lost to Aldo. So those are all very respectable losses. And I mean, the top of the food chain type of losses. And Lamas has beaten a lot of good competition along the way. Oliveira, his win over Diego Sanchez was another one. I mean, especially how dominant he was during that fight. I know Sanchez is past his prime, whatever, and it was, you know, down to this weight class, whatnot. But still, I'm just saying, he's beat Bermudez, he beat Diaz, he beat Oliveira. I mean, he's beaten a lot of good fighters Lamas has. So he should have the slight edge in a lot of ways, but Knight has just been one of these guys. It's on an extreme roll, meaning that he's gaining confidence really fight by fight. His ability overall, as far as wrestling goes, is improving. He's becoming a more dangerous fighter everywhere this fight takes place. I mean, his win over Skelly, I was surprised. I didn't think he was quite ready to keep a guy like Skelly at bay or make it a grueling enough fight where we know that Skelly gasses and slows down in fights or whatnot. But I wasn't sure if Knight had what it takes to make it that kind of miserable, miserable fight for Skelly. And he did. I mean, it was a thing of beauty. Not many people get to finish a guy like Chaz Skelly. And Knight, I mean, like I said, he looked fantastic. I mean, the guy, even if you do put him on his back, you got to eat punishment from being in top position. Knight's always scrambling, always looking for submission, always looking to get out. But if he's along the way, if he's not having that much success, he's beating you up with his elbow attack. You know, he just makes life miserable for you, regardless of where the fight takes place. And then if he's not on his back on the feet, he pushes a high pace. He comes at you. He doesn't really have that one punch, crazy knockout power, but he does have enough to land a solid punch and put you down. That's for sure. But it's more of the accumulation of shots. It's his accuracy that comes into play sometimes. It's his IQ. It's his counterpunching ability as well. Everything about Knight, I mean, offensively is on point. And if you clip the guy, he's just going to keep coming. I mean, he's got a solid chin. We've seen that as well. He's just a warrior. So I think right now the timing of everything is really good. I think what happens here is it's going to be a very close competitive fight, but Knight is going to do more damage along the way. He's going to beat Lamas up. And I think even if Lamas is going for those takedowns, and that's probably his best way to win, is trying to control Knight and put him on his back. It's kind of like Kawajiri did in his debut. But I think, again, that was a short notice debut for Knight. And since that fight, he's gotten a lot better. His takedown defense has improved. And again, he doesn't, I think, make life easy on you, even if you do get him down. So Lamas is going to have to get those takedowns. He's going to have to basically control the tempo of the fight. I don't think he's going to do so. I think it's going to probably remain on the feet a little bit more than most of us think it will. And on the feet, Knight does damage. So if anything negative you could say about Lamas throughout his career, he's been a bit chinny at times. And, you know, I just don't trust it. Even though he survived against a guy like Aldo, you know, he survived against some heavy hitters before. And Knight, it doesn't really fall into a heavy, heavy hitter category. I still think Knight beats him up on the feet to the point where he might possibly stop him. So I think it's going to be a close competitive decision if it hits the scorecards, but I lean Knight to kind of sway the judges over to his side, just the way he fights. I mean, it's hard not to like the guy. And then also, if there is going to be a finish, I think it's probably Knight knocking out Lamas. So I do think that Knight is going to continue his rise towards the top and towards a title shot at 145 pounds. And man, I've been nothing but impressed by him. So unfortunately for Lamas, I think he suffers a defeat here against Jason Knight. So the pick is Knight to win.
This is seriously a great matchup. And it's crazy because this wasn't even the original matchup. It was supposed to be Lamas against Chan Sung Jung, the Korean Zombie. But Zombie went down with a knee injury, and in steps Jason Knight with plenty of time to prepare, by the way. This was early June, so he's had almost a full training camp, so I'm not concerned whatsoever about short notice or any of that stuff. And you got to think, Jason Knight has just this great chin. He has this tenacious killer instinct, and he has a very dynamic and aggressive and scary ground game. Knight, if he ever gets put on his back, I mean, he is constantly threatening with submissions and rubber guards and sweeps and then working to get back up. I mean, he is all over the place, fun to watch on the ground. And then on the feet, he has a crazy chin. I mean, his last fight against Chaz Skelly, Skelly was connecting with some bombs, and Knight just didn't give a crap. He just kept pushing forward, landing shots, and he just wore Skelly down. Skelly got tired. He couldn't get takedowns anymore. And then Knight just connected with one good shot, and Skelly just crumpled into a heap. It was amazing. Like, what Knight has been able to do, the improvements in his game, and as he continues to face better and better competition, like, Chaz Skelly, you know, had a lot of the similar skill sets compared to Ricardo Lamas. You know, so this was no joke for him whatsoever, and he just tore through him. So against Lamas, Knight is going to have to be very careful of Lamas's kicking game. That's one area that Knight isn't really elite at. So if Lamas is able to get some heavy kicks going, that could do some damage to Knight. If Lamas can get his wrestling going, you know, Knight has been put on his back before, but again, you know, he's been working on that so much, and you've seen the development more in recent fights, so I don't know if that's a huge strength for Lamas here, if he's going to be able to keep Knight on his back. And Lamas normally is a pretty solid technical striker, and he probably will still have the technical advantage against Knight, but Knight makes up for it with pace and aggression. So I think this is just a crazy fun matchup, and I think that they're both going to be going at it, and it should be really fun for however long it lasts. But I like Jason Knight. I think the chin strength could be a big factor, and the fact that Knight just does not relent. Like, there is just no quit in him, and he just does not stop moving forward. So I like Jason Knight to pull this one out against his higher-ranked, more experienced foe. Now, moving on to the opening bout of the main card on pay-per-view, we have a light heavyweight contest between Jimmy Manua. I said it wrong. Between Jimmy Manua, who is 17-2, and Volkan Ozdemir, who is 14-1. Now, Nick, what's the MMA oddsmaker's perspective on this one?
Up in Manoa, minus 190, the comeback on Ozdemir, plus 150. Right now looking over at Five Dimes, Manoa minus 170, the comeback on Ozdemir, plus 150. So line margins have tightened up, staying about where it's at. There is two-way action coming into this fight as well. The line early on, I believe, dipped down a little bit for Ozdemir, a little bit more of dog action coming in, and then it blew up to over 2-1, I believe, at one point for Manoa as well. So more support coming in on the favorite. And now we're starting to see it kind of settle back down to where it is now, minus 170, 150. So two-way action on this fight. A lot of split opinions out there for a good reason. I mean, if you look at Manoa, man, the guy's just a beast. I mean, we've known that since his UFC debut. But right now, he's starting to really come into his own. His takedown defense is getting better. His conditioning is getting better. He's starting to beat very solid fighters, where in the past, when he first came into the UFC, you know, he made his debut against Kingsbury. That was a struggle. I mean, I bet him against Kingsbury. That was way back when, so I won't spend too much time talking about that fight. But just to put it in perspective a little bit, he won the first round easily, almost got Kingsbury out of there. But as it progressed, I mean, you started to see the tide turning a little bit. And Kingsbury, if it wasn't an injury stoppage in that fight, he might have won that fight because he started to take over in round two. So that's the kind of fighter Manoa was back then. And, of course, he got some momentum on his side, and then he had some setbacks with Gustafson, with Anthony Johnson. I mean, both acceptable losses there. But I think that that really helped him get on the right track. You know, sometimes they say, you know, taking a loss makes you better, and that this is a case for Manoa. I think that it is – his conditioning did improve a little bit. His wrestling takedown defense, like I said, did improve a little bit. And he's always been a beast on the feet. I mean, so much pure power. One of the most devastating strikers in light heavyweight division for sure. So he's got that going for him. And Ozdemir, he's been one of those guys that the public overall in the MMA community doesn't really get behind him all that much. They think he's, to me, it seems like a lot of people think this guy's a can. He got beaten Bellator, you know, he got put taken down and submitted. The guy's a joke. I mean, he came into the UFC with a little bit of hype behind him as well. But again, huge underdog coming in. And of course, he gets beat by OSP. Or I mean, he was supposed to get beat by OSP, I should say. But he ends up pulling off that win. And then people still faded him against Sirkunov as well in his very next fight. And he pulls off that win. So back-to-back wins over very solid competition for Ozdemir. And it wasn't a fluke. This guy is good. And you want to talk about improving. Since that Bellator loss, that he had to Anunsen, and that was back in, I believe, 2014. He's been working that wrestling. He's been working that takedown defense a lot. And you're talking about another guy that really the highlight of his career has been his striking. So it's a guy that needed to work the ground game a little bit more, needed work specifically the takedown defense, because his ground game, Ozdemir's ground game is not that bad, especially offensively from the top. The guy could do some damage. I mean, he's not really known for it, but if you watch some of his footage, he does get top position on the ground and he drops some bombs on you. So he's got some ground awareness. It's just that he's always been the type of fighter that likes to stand and bang and does the most damage on the feet and does his best work that way. So you basically have striker versus striker in this matchup here, and two big heavy hitters going at it. A tough one to call. And I, like I said, for me, I really think that Ozdemir has been floating under the radar a little bit too much, and just a lack of disrespect. A lot of people are confused why he's even ranked so highly right away and coming into the light heavyweight division. Is the light heavyweight division that weak or whatnot? It is. I mean, it's not one of the stronger divisions in the UFC, that's for sure. But that being said, Ozdemir deserves to be in the top 10 of the light heavyweight division, and he deserves to be where he's at right here. I think he's actually going to beat Manoa and pull off another impressive upset win. So I trust his chin a little bit more. I think that both these guys are going to struggle getting this fight to the ground. And as this fight progresses, I like Ozdemir a little bit more. I know Manoa, I just said his cardio has definitely improved in this fight, in his career so far, but I still think Ozdemir will push a little bit of higher pace. And if it does somehow hit the scorecards, I think he can win on the scorecards. But along the way, I trust his chin a little bit more too. I mean, the guy does have some special power on the feet. I think he can clip Manoa and put him out. He's a younger fighter as well. So I think there's a lot of upside to Ozdemir still right now, even though I think most of the fans and the bettors out there might not agree quite yet. I think after he gets this win, he probably will get a little bit more respect as well, because, I mean, that'll prove to people three solid wins over really good competition, top-tier light heavyweights. You deserve some respect. So I'm on the dog train here, man. I think that Ozdemir does it again, and it is definitely a dog or pass situation. So at the betting window, you definitely have to take advantage of plus 150 odds or so. I mean, I really do think this is more of a toss-up fight. In fact, I think Ozdemir should be possibly even the slight favorite here. So betting value on Ozdemir, take advantage of that. But my pick is also going to be Ozdemir straight out, because I do think he gets it done here.
Both of these fighters are on quite a roll in the light heavyweight division, and a two-fight win streak is a big roll in the light heavyweight division. Because, you know, guys just can't seem to be, to get past that level of top contenders lately. Shogun Hua is still a top 10 fighter, and he really hasn't been relevant for a while now. So that just shows you how tough it can be to really crack through right now. And, with Manoa, he had quality wins both by stoppage, over Anderson and OSP, and what Ozdemir was able to do recently was just insane. I mean, makes the UFC debut, beats OSP by decision, and then finishes Misha Cirkunov by first round knockout. I mean, I don't think anybody saw that coming. Everyone and their mother thought that Cirkunov was going to win that fight by submission, and Ozdemir made them all look silly, including me. So I gained a ton of respect for Ozdemir in that fight, because he just showcased some sneaky power. I mean, Cirkunov is a guy that had taken some shots in fights and been not the worst for wear. And Ozdemir hit him with something that didn't even look like he threw it hard, and he just flatlined him. So I gained a ton of respect for Ozdemir's power in that fight. Now, Manoa, on the other hand, while he's talented and he has a ton of power in his own right, his durability is something that I think is safe to question. I mean, you look, his fight against Anthony Johnson, Johnson just destroyed him pretty violently. And then Alexander Gustafsson also was able to get a knockout over him. So both of his losses, he got stopped, and he was facing guys that were talented strikers. And now he's stepping in there against Ozdemir, a guy that is a talented striker with a strong kickboxing background. So I'm definitely understanding why Nick likes Ozdemir, but Manoa, you do have to respect him. I mean, his last two opponents, he was able to step in there and get quality stoppage victories, and he was on a nice run in the UFC when he first joined, picking up a bunch of injury stoppage victories. But the thing he has the biggest advantage of in this fight is probably the reach. I mean, he's got a 4-inch reach advantage, and if he can fight long, there's a chance that he could just piece up Ozdemir with some heavy straight punches and jabs. So that's something to look out for. But overall, the people that have the time Ozdemir lost, it was because he got out grappled. It was because somebody took him down. Somebody submitted him. He hasn't really lost a stand up fight yet in his MMA or kickboxing career. I think he was 5-0 in kickboxing as well. So I think Ozdemir might be the guy to rely on here. You got to also remember, I know he doesn't look it, but Jimmy Manoa was 37 years old. Ozdemir's just 27. So huge 10-year age gap in this fight. And I think that could potentially be a factor as well, especially in regards to Manoa's durability. With Manoa having been knocked out twice by, granted, two guys with heavy hands, Ozdemir has the ability to stop him as well. And if these guys are landing blow for blow, I think it's Manoa that goes down first. So I'm going to side with the underdog Ozdemir as well. Now dropping down to the welterweight division, we have Robbie Lawler, who is 27-11 with one no contest, taking on Donald Cowboy Cerrone, who is 32-8 with one no contest. Now, Nick, where did you open this fight? And how has the public shifted things so far?
Up in Lawler, minus 175. The comeback on Cerrone at plus 135. Right now, over at Five Dimes, it's Lawler, minus 155. The comeback on Cerrone, still plus 135. So line margins have tightened up a little bit. Two action coming into this fight. Don't have to tell you guys how popular both fighters are, how well-respected they are, even at the betting window. So there should be a decent amount of two-way action coming into this fight. Line should hold steady. I'm sure we'll see a surge at one point or another, especially by fight day, with some big action coming in one way or the other. But this is a tough fight, tough one to call. I mean, this was supposed to recently happen too. So they rescheduled the fight because Cerrone got a blood infection and he had to take a little bit more time. And that was back at UFC 213. So not that long ago, really. So earlier this month. So a few weeks later, the blood infection clears and he's good to go, man. You know what? I'm not sold on that. I mean, that's what's going to make me pick Lawler here. At the beginning, I wasn't sure. I mean, this was such a close fight. I could see Cerrone winning it. I could still see him winning this fight, obviously, because, I mean, early on, it's going to get really interesting. Both these guys are finishers. So I think that, you know, we could see, obviously, a war. I would have liked to see both these guys coming in, maybe not off of a loss for Lawler. I mean, a devastating knockout loss to lose a strap. You know, rebounding and coming in and fighting a guy like Cerrone, because there's a lot of unknown questions about Lawler right now too. And then Cerrone, like I said, his blood infection and what he has going on there health issue wise. I'm not a doctor, but it can't be a good thing, because I guarantee you he wasn't training during that time that he had to recover. So the last couple weeks for me with Cerrone's camp has been a huge question mark. That being said, the way they match up with each other, I think it's a good matchup. I mean, both these guys like to stand and bang. Obviously Cerrone's a little bit more well-rounded because he can beat you on the ground as well. Lawler has decent wrestling, so he's hard to take down and keep down, but overall, you can't compare the two as far as pure jiu-jitsu skill goes. Cerrone has him beat, I mean, by a huge margin there. So Cerrone is a more capable finisher here, but I don't know. I think he's going to struggle getting Lawler down, and I think that even though Lawler is coming off of that devastating knockout loss against Woodley, Woodley has more of that explosive one-punch knockout power, obviously, than a guy like Cerrone does. Now, Cerrone can knock you out with one punch or one kick, obviously, but I still think that that explosiveness of Woodley caught Lawler and just put him out, and he did what he had to do here. I think it's going to be a little bit different. I think Lawler's going to be able to pace himself a little bit better, kind of find his groove, and then maybe lands that shot on Cerrone or so. So this is a fight that realistically is a coin flip type of fight for me that could go either way. And again, I think more so than not, I mean, if this was a little while back, I would be a little bit more probably confident Lawler, but man, I mean, he's been around for so long. Father Time catches up with all of them, and especially if you've been in the game as long as Lawler has. Even if he made that championship run in the UFC, so much respect for the guy. I mean, what he was able to do, because he's been around the game for so long. But that being said, it's time now. We've seen him get clipped. We've seen him get knocked out. It's definitely time to be a little bit concerned with him and see how much left he has in the tank. So I'm going to pick him to win, but it can't be a confident pick. And this is one, again, that you stay away from the betting window. It's a dog or pass situation. But seriously, can you really have a lot of confidence in Cerrone right now, especially with him coming off of a delay because of a blood infection? I don't know. I mean, I think we all just stay away from this fight and we just kind of watch, and hopefully it's a good matchup between two high caliber fighters. I think that's probably the best way to go here. But I'll lean a little bit more towards Lawler. Just not a confident pick either way. Just too many question marks surrounding this. And if you don't think that's true, then you're lying to yourself. I mean, this is definitely a head scratcher type of fight. And one, unfortunately, that again, I think it's with everything that's come into play here, it's kind of watered it down a little bit some, because I mean, not too long ago, a year, year and a half ago, we would have loved to see these guys go at it that much more. So hopefully the fight is better than I'm saying right now it'll be, but I think the expectations kind of got lowered a little bit for me at least. So that being said, Lawler's the pick, but I'm not sure how it's going to play out. I mean, both of these guys have the finishing ability, and we could see a 3-round war, which would be pretty fun as well. So hopefully it's an exciting fight. My pick is Lawler.
And I was seriously on the fence about this fight. I mean, Robbie Lawler was the champ for a reason. I mean, granted, he took a lot of damage in those fights, and it finally caught up to him with the Woodley fight. But, I mean, this guy just showed so much heart. The problem, though, is in a lot of those fights, if they were 3-round fights, he would have lost a majority of them. So that is something that is a concern to me for sure, because is he going to be able to take that crazy 5th-round version of Robbie Lawler where he just digs deep and finds the way to win and bring it back to a 3-round fight? So that is something that you have to consider here. But also, you know, Donald Cerrone, as Nick mentioned, the whole blood infection thing, he was also dealing with a bit of a groin injury. So, you know, and he wasn't allowed to train for at least 7 days. And that was back on June 28th, a month ago. So I'm also not fully convinced that he's going to be fully ready for this fight with all the things that have been going wrong with him physically. It could be just a part of his body breaking down, because he is the guy that fights the most often in the UFC. Like it's always Donald Cerrone. You can always rely on him to be the guy that can step in to fight anybody on short notice. He just wants to fight. So, you know, that does catch up. You know, nobody's immune to all the physical problems. Now, Lawler took that year off. Hopefully it helped with in terms of, you know, getting a little bit of your chin back, you know, getting just your head cleared. But, you know, I am a little concerned, you know, when fighters take that much time off, like voluntarily, when they're not even hurt, you know, who knows where their head is. You know, he was, you know, in a dark place after Woodley took his title. So this is, though, an incredible fight in terms of stylistically. Lawler pushes a strong pace. He has heavy hands, great kicking game. But Cerrone, heavy hands, even better kicking game. And Cerrone has a pretty nasty submission game to go with it. But I don't know if he'll be able to utilize it. Robbie Lawler's takedown defense has become elite. So I think this fight stays standing. And it could just boil down to power and chin strength. And Lawler's chin has started to go, but so is Cerrone's. You got to look, and with all the damage Cerrone's taken in his MMA and in his UFC career, I mean, his last fight, Masvidal was able to really hurt him in the first round and then finish him in the second round. He took some damage against Matt Brown. He took some damage against Alex Oliveira. He took a lot of damage from Dos Anjos. He took, you know, there's just fight after fight after fight where, you know, he got beat up on, and he's taken damage. So, you know, that adds up, and you know, you saw that in the Masvidal fight. Now, is Lawler's technique as clean as Masvidal's? I don't think so. So it won't be quite as easy for him to find those openings and take advantage of them like Masvidal did, but, they're still there. And when Cerrone does fight pure stand-up fighters, he usually, that is where he tends to struggle a little bit. So, I favor Lawler a little bit here. I can totally see Cerrone just stepping in there, landing some huge shots and Lawler crumpling. But I can also see Lawler, you know, being re-energized a little bit after the long layoff and having that crazy will to fight and just digging deep and having no quit like he always does. So I think this fight's going to be close. I would not be shocked if Cerrone wins it, but I'm going to side with Robbie Lawler as well. He'll be my pick. Now moving on and dropping down to the women's 145-pound division, the featherweight division, we have Chris Cyborg, who is 16-1 with one no contest, taking on Tanya Evinger, who is 19-5, and this is for the women's featherweight title. Now, Nick, What's the MMA oddsmaker's perspective on this one?
Up in Cyborg, minus 1,200. The comeback on Avenger at plus 600. So huge, huge favorite. Of course, no surprise if you guys follow women's MMA with the likes of Ronda Rousey, with the likes of Cyborg. I mean, they've always been pretty decent favorites. I mean, Cyborg especially recently, obviously. So Cyborg Justino right now over at Five Dimes is minus 1375. The comeback on Avenger is at plus 900. So I opened at minus 1200 and still not enough. I mean, people won't hesitate to lay it. And they did. So I'm sure there's some parlay action, even though it's not really going to do much for you out there. There's some parlay action coming in her way as well. So this is her fight to win or lose. Obviously the UFC wants, Cyborg to get the W, wants her to hold that strap. That's why they made that division for her. So make no mistake. Cyborg knows how marketable UFC knows, excuse me, how marketable Cyborg is. And they're giving her a shot here, which is smart business. I mean, I totally get it. Avenger does have a path to victory, though. I mean, she really does, and it's her submission game. Now, can she get Cyborg to the ground and catch her back or, you know, put herself in that position? I don't know. That's going to be pretty tough to do because Cyborg typically does have really good takedown defense, and along the way, she destroys her opponents before they even get that opportunity in most cases. So same thing goes here. I mean, Cyborg's a huge favorite because I'm expecting, and as everybody else is expecting, she's going to probably knock Avenger out. I mean, again, this is Cyborg's weight class. Avenger is the bantamweight champion of Invicta right now and is a deserving champion. I mean, she's been – we talk about a lot of the guy MMA pioneers or whatnot, or, you know, guys that have been around for a long time. I was just talking about Robbie Lawler, for example. I mean, he's been in the UFC for so long, and he had that recent resurgence in his career and getting that welterweight strap and all that stuff. I mean, can't be more proud of him. Well, in the female version – of that. I'm not saying Avenger's like Robbie Lawler. I'm just saying that she's been around the sport for a long time as well. So she's one of these, I think, MMA legends, veterans, savvy vets that have been around the sport for a long time. And now she's on an extreme role in her own right. So she's finally getting the spotlight opportunity that she's been putting in so many years for. And she made herself legit. I mean, she's put in the hard work and her ground game is definitely a force to be reckoned with. Now, of course, she has to get it to the ground for this to take place. So I'm not going to waste any more time on this fight. I mean, it's clear who's supposed to win because she's such a high favorite. I'll be hoping for Avenger to pull off the upset. Love a huge, huge parlay buster or busting up straight bets like this for sure in regards to a huge favorite. So I'm going to be pulling for the underdog. Will I be betting her? That's a whole nother story. I mean, even though I do think the line's a little bit high, I still expect Avenger to probably get knocked out like most people do against Cyborg. So the pick is Cyborg. I don't recommend a bet on this fight either way. I think it's a fight you kind of avoid, but it's hard not to pick Cyborg in this fight. It's kind of a no-brainer here. So hopefully the dog wins, but I doubt she does.
There's really not much to say about this fight, so I'll keep it brief. This was hopefully – the UFC was hoping this would be Cyborg against Germaine de Rendami, the women's featherweight champ, but Rendami refused to fight Cyborg, so the UFC stripped her and took the title from her. And then it was supposed to be Cyborg against Megan Anderson, but Anderson pulled out of the fight, and now it's Cyborg against Avenger. Now, Avenger's a talented fighter. She's the women's bantamweight champ of Invicta, but she's been able to win those fights by grinding her opponents down. I mean, she took on Irene Aldana, took her down, beat her up on the ground, ends up getting a stoppage victory. She took down multiple people and has been able to get top position and either work for submissions or TKOs on the ground. She is not a good striker at all. And if she does not get Cyborg down, she is going to be filleted. I mean, this is literally Cyborg won't see Avenger anymore as a person. She'll just see just a delicious rare steak on a platter, just ready to just get devoured. Because that is the difference between Avenger and Cyborg on the feet. Like, to beat Cyborg standing, you need to have power, you need to have speed, you need to have amazing footwork and technique, and Avenger has none of that. So, I mean, honestly, I would be shocked if this fight gets out of the first round. I'd be surprised if it gets out of the first 2 minutes, because Avenger, it just all relies on the toughness of Avenger, because she's scrappy and resilient, but so's Leslie Smith, and Cyborg just massacred Leslie Smith too. And I have the utmost respect for Leslie Smith and her style. But it does not translate well to fighting Cyborg, and I think Avenger is going to be in even bigger trouble. So my pick, Cyborg, and I don't think this fight is even close. I think the odds are even, it'd be worth betting Cyborg and with the crazy odds. That's how one-sided this fight is. But so my pick is Cyborg. Now moving on to the co-main event of the evening, we have a welterweight title bout between champion Tyron Woodley, who is 16-3-1. He's taking on the challenger, Damian Maya, who is 25-6. Now, Nick, where did you open this fight, and how has the public shifted things so far?
I opened Woodley minus 175, the comeback on Maya at plus 135. Right now, looking over five dimes, it is minus 225. Minus 225 Woodley, the comeback on Maya at plus 185. So, more action coming in Woodley's way. He is the welterweight champion. Stylistically, if you're looking at it, you have a grappler versus wrestler here, that the wrestler has obviously a crazy amount of athleticism and knockout power that should be able to keep the fight upright against the grappler and knock him out. I think that's what everybody's thinking, and that's on paper really how it should play out. The problem is Maya is a special athlete in his own right. I mean, Woodley's athleticism, you can't say – I mean, you could rave about it on and on about it. I mean, you can't say enough about it. He's just an explosive athlete that has really got the confidence. He's improved his game through the years for sure. And he deserves to be where he's at right now. I mean, credit to him for sure. But Maya, in the same regard, he's one of the best grappling based fighters that I've ever seen make the transition over to MMA. I mean, the guy's beaten so many good fighters. He's tough as nails. I mean, the guy's 40 years old almost. I believe he's 39 or 40. I mean, he's still competing at the highest level against young fighters. Not that Willie's ultra young. I mean, I think he's 35 years old as well. But the point being is Maya's put in the work, and he's really converted his game to fit MMA so awesome that he got this title shot. I mean, he's beaten a lot of great opponents coming in. Masvidal, a lot of people weren't expecting him to beat Masvidal. They thought it was a tough matchup. Again, stylistically, takedown defense. And Masvidal's ability to just be a killer on the feet and finish fights. I mean, that was definitely a tough, tough fight for Maya. No, there's no question about that. Masvidal made it an absolute grueling fight for Maya, but Maya came through. His win over Condit before that, his win over Matt Brown, his win over Gunnar Nelson. I mean, you can go on and on for Damian Maya. He pulls off wins. I mean, that's what the guy does. And even if he can't sub you, he does enough to control the tempo of the fight and get your back and control you on the ground long enough that he wins rounds that way as well. So even though he might not have the best wrestling in the world, Maya manages to get the fight to the ground more times than not. He doesn't even need to use his wrestling. A lot of times if you watch his fights, even if you're up against a cage with him, he ends up finding his way to your back. And once he's on your back, I mean, that's why Woodley's joking, or well, really not even joking, but I mean, he's mentioned it on his broadcast that he's been training with backpacks on, you know, full of weights or whatnot. And just to get used to that heavy pressure on your back, because he knows, I mean, there's a good chance that Maya will take his back. So he's prepared, definitely. And that's one thing I also should comment about Woodley. He's a very intelligent fighter. You could just tell by the way he comes across when he's doing his Fox duties, is that FS1 preview shows and whatnot. I mean, the guy's an ultra intelligent fighter that has everything. I mean, he's just basically the total package. I even questioned before his cardio a little bit, but now he's proven. I mean, in those Thompson fights, he's proven that he's even addressed that a little bit. His cardio and conditioning has gotten better. So Woodley right now is the best he's ever been. He's confident. He knows he's the best welterweight in the world. He knows he's a deserving champion, and that's dangerous. But hard to count Maya out. This is a tough fight for me because, man, I would not bet against Maya really in the whole welterweight division right now. I mean, you cannot do it. It's not a smart move, even if you think this stylistic matchup is really catered for Woodley. You still cannot trust and lay 2-1 over a guy like Maya. So that's where I stand with this. As far as a pure pick goes, I understand the stylistic matchup does favor Woodley. I think there's a good chance that he does sprawl brawl, keep enough space and distance and utilize his athleticism and knockout power and give Maya fits and probably knock him out. I mean, he does have the potential to do so, even though Maya's tough as nails, but still Maya gets Woodley's back. All it takes is one time. And even though Woodley has shown good fight IQ and sub defense, Damian Maya's whole nother level if he gets on your back. So I'm not sure Woodley can survive underground with a guy like Damian Maya. So a lot of intriguing factors going into this fight for sure. I do have a ton of respect for both fighters. I'm going to lean again towards Woodley because stylistically it says, even on paper, I mean, he should have the edge in this fight, but I will never count Maya out. I do think it's a dog or pass situation, especially according to the line move. I don't agree with it. I think plus 185 is a little bit too high on Maya, even if he goes out there and Woodley knocks him out in a couple punches. You know what I mean? I would still think that Maya definitely has some value around plus 185. So dog or pass situation, but I'm going to pick Woodley to win. I just think it's just stylistically, it is a tough matchup for Maya, but I mean, I will never count the guy out again. I've been more than impressed by him. And again, part of me pulls for him because of his age, because of what he's had to go through in his career. He's been waiting for this title shot for a long time. I mean, really, he should have got this long ago. So finally, the UFC had no choice but to give him the title shot here. So I'm going to be rooting for the old man. I mean, no disrespect calling him an old man, but it is what it is. I'm going to be rooting for him. I don't know if he's going to get the W here, but it is a dog or pass situation, in my opinion. And I wouldn't be surprised if he does get it done. But officially, as far as a pick goes, I'm going to pick Woodley. Now, I always say this on each podcast by the end of the show, so I'm going to say it right now, just for this fight, for any fight that we pick here, Brian and I, our official picks do get posted on MMAoddsbreaker.com when we release our staff picks. So this could change, especially after weigh-ins, if something crazy happens or I see something. But I'm not saying I'm going to switch this pick. I'm just saying keep an eye on our Oddsbreaker staff picks just in case. But for right now, I have to pick Woodley to win this fight. I do see some advantages for him in this spot.
Realistically, the only people that have ever been able to beat Woodley have been the ones that have been able to avoid takedowns and have been the ones that have been able to outwork him on the feet. I mean, you go to his first official loss, you know, Nate Marquardt, you know, he just slowed down in that fight and Marquardt turned it on late and was able to get a late TKO. And then, you know, the Jake Shields fight was not a good performance. I mean, Woodley was just lost there. And the same thing with Rory McDonald. He just kind of froze him with a great jab and kept him at bay. So we haven't really seen Woodley against an elite ground fighter like this, though. This is a matchup that, you know, it's tough to decipher what's exactly going to happen, because on the feet, Woodley is so much better than Maya. Like, Maya spent a lot of time trying to improve his stand-up for years, and really all that did was turn him into a mediocre fighter because it was at the expense of his ground game. And then, you know, all he was a guy that had okay stand-up that without much power. And he was being forced to try to win, you know, ugly decisions on the feet. And he gave that up the second he dropped to the welterweight division. And it's been a huge boost to his career. I mean, this guy has given fits to everyone in the welterweight division. Like, when he gets on people, he does not get off. It's like he just has these suffocating hips and pressure. And he has just the best technique. Like, he doesn't do, like, these insanely complex rubber guard things. It's just basic stuff, but it's so clean. And also, he's doing it left-handed because he's a southpaw. So some people just aren't quite used to where he's attacking from, and he's just able to just slowly just get past you. And it's just been an amazing thing to behold, because we haven't really seen these one-dimensional type fighters since the early days of the UFC, and Maya's making it work. That being said, it's going to be tough for him. I know he's been able to get everybody and their mother down. He got Rory McDonald down. I mean, he's been able to get these people on the ground, and then he's been able to take their backs. But I don't know if he'll be able to do it to Woodley. I mean, Woodley is so athletic. He's got so much power. And Maya, if he does not immediately close that distance, he could get knocked out. I mean, we saw when Maya fought Nate Marquardt. I mean, he screwed around on the feet for a couple seconds, maybe trying to get Marquardt to lower his guard a little bit. And in those couple seconds, he got knocked out. So, and Woodley hits harder than Marquardt, I think. So if Woodley connects with something nasty, Maya's in trouble. And I know Woodley's had his issues with conditioning in the past, but I think he's starting to put those behind him now that he's working with real coaches instead of self-training, which he was doing for years. And Maya, on the other hand, he gets tired. I mean, it is exhausting work what he does in fights where having to get these takedowns and then force his opponent to stay down no matter what they're trying to do, and then get to whatever specific position he's trying to get to, usually a dominant back take. It's exhausting, and he shows. I mean, the one time he headlined against Ryan LaFleur, I mean, he got almost 10-7 in the fifth round, because after dominating the first four, Maya was just so exhausted he could barely move, and he was forced to just flop to his back for five straight minutes. So that is something that I am concerned about. I mean, Maya's going to have to expend so much energy in this fight to get the takedown and then start working for submissions. And if he does not get the submission, I think he's going to be so tired. And I actually, even though he has a history of cardio problems, I favor Tyron Woodley's conditioning here. So unless Maya gets a submission in the first round or two, I don't see how he can win this fight. I have to side with Tyron Woodley. I just think he has way more ways to win, and that includes dragging this fight out a little bit. So my pick is going to be Tyron Woodley. Now, this brings us to the main event of the evening. We have Daniel Cormier, who is the UFC light heavyweight champion, and he is 19-1. He is defending his title against the former champ and former interim champ, John Jones, who is 22-1. And this is a rematch. Now, Nick, what's the MMA odds maker's perspective on this one?
Up in Jones, minus 280. The comeback on Cormier at plus 220. Right now, looking over five dimes, it is minus 265 for Jones. The comeback on Cormier at plus 225. So line margins have tightened up a little bit. And two-way action coming in this fight as well. Man, of course, we've all been wanting to see this fight for such a long time. I mean, it's unfortunate that it's taken this long for it to take place. In fact, I think that both of these guys, I mean, whether you want to admit it or not, I mean, the time off has done them not good. I mean, even Cormier, he's been obviously fighting the whole time. Jones has been going through his personal issues and his suspension or whatnot as well. But he hasn't been the most active fighter, really, if you want to say that. And I think he's not by any means getting any younger either. I mean, Cormier, he's a special athlete, but right now he's almost 40 years old as well. I believe he's 38 years old. So I think sitting on the shelf at times, and with his injuries that he's had during training camps or whatnot, and again, the not fighting consistently, I mean, Cormier's aging. And again, you can't really put too much stock into that, because I mean, he hasn't really had that, in my opinion, that war to prove me otherwise, especially since that Anthony Johnson fight in his last fight. Johnson was, I don't even know what to say about that. That game plan was just ridiculous. I'm still kind of mad about that, because I was expecting a lot better from Anthony Johnson, but that wasn't really even a challenge, to be honest with you, for Cormier. And that's Anthony Johnson we're talking about. So I don't put in too much stock into that fight. I think it was more Anthony Johnson fight IQ being ridiculous in that fight more than I give credit for Cormier actually pulling off that win. Now, of course, he has a win over Anthony Johnson before that, but that being said, you go back to the fight before that, Anderson Silva, Cormier didn't look that great. I mean, he really didn't. He got the win over a legend like Anderson Silva that took the fight on short notice and moved up a weight class, but he did what he had to do. He just didn't overwhelm, and he didn't look as impressive as you'd like to see. So to me, I don't know. I mean, if he fights like that against John Jones might finish him along the way. I think he really might. Now, again, question marks are along the way for John Jones as well. He's been out for so long, like I mentioned, and the last fight that he did have with some time off against OSP, he wasn't even able to finish OSP. And a lot of people were thinking that, man, I mean, is John's where he was? I mean, he had some rust and he didn't fight that good against OSP. There's a lot of question marks surrounding John Jones as well. Now, of course, looking at and hearing and putting, you know, ears against the wall type of thing or whatever, you're hearing that John Jones has had a tremendous training camp. He looks to be in great shape. He's taking this fight serious. I mean, all the things are lining up for Jones to have a really good performance, of course. And of course, you got to look at the motivation factor for Cormier as well. This is the only man that has defeated him, and it was a close competitive fight. If you go back and watch it, make no mistake, Jones deserved to win that fight, but it was close. So I expect another close fight here, but I think that Jones is going to be a little bit more dangerous along the way. I think that his cardio is probably going to be better than Cormier's as well. So as it progresses, I think if it does get to round three, round four, round five in this fight, I think that the chance of Jones finishing gets a little bit higher as it goes. Because if one thing, I mean, Cormier's cardio and his conditioning as he got into the championship rounds definitely let up a little bit. So we've seen that from him. And I think that again, he's not getting any younger, so I'm expecting it to not improve at all. I think that it'll be a rough five rounds if it goes the distance for Cormier as well. So I won't take up any more time. I know this is an important fight, but stylistically they match up well together. I think that Jones, his takedown defense is obviously good enough to keep the fight upright. I think he can win this fight in another stand-up battle if he needs to. I think he can – he's crazy enough to go for takedowns against Cormier as well. So this fight will take place in all areas of MMA for sure. But I think what it comes down to is who is the better striker of the two, who has better work in the clinch. And I think those signs point to John Jones. Despite the time off, despite the ring rust or whatever people may say, I still have to lean his way. Now, as far as the betting window goes – it's tough. I mean, it's 2.5 to 1. I do think that Jones wins, so almost 3 to 1 or whatever. I don't know if it's worth betting, especially with all the question marks behind both guys right now, especially John Jones. So I do think he wins. I'm expecting him to look pretty good, and I hope he does, really. So we see a John Jones come back to life a little bit and kind of make another impressive run. I know he still has, you know, a long career left if he plays his cards right. So I think John Jones gets a W here, maybe even a stoppage before we do hit the scorecards this time against Daniel Cormier. So unfortunately for Cormier, I think he finally loses that strap to a worthy former champion in John Jones.
This is a really exciting fight. I mean, there's so much bad blood between these guys with, you know, Daniel Cormier kind of presenting this image of being, you know, the goody two shoes guy that follows all the rules, the former Olympian, and John Jones being the bad boy that, you know, did drugs and steroids and drinks and drives and gets DUIs and, hit and runs and all this crazy stuff. And, but what it comes down to is how are their skills? I mean, when they fought the last time, Cormier was so emotional and so aggressive. He came out really strong trying to bully Jones in the clinch. He landed a ton of uppercuts early and did a lot of damage to Jones. And Jones, he has this tendency to just want to beat his opponents at whatever they're strongest with. So what did Jones do? He spent the next 4 rounds in the clinch with Cormier and wore him down. Cormier was the embrace the grind. He was wearing shirts that said break bones. And John Jones broke Cormier. Like Cormier just couldn't keep up with him. And in the end, it was Jones's work in the clinch that won him that fight. And even Jones even got takedowns in that fight on Cormier. I think he was the first person to ever take Cormier down. So if Jones is at that level still, then he should win. The problem is Jones had a huge layoff with his hit and run, and he came back and fought Ovin St. Preux, and I thought he looked like garbage in that fight. Yeah, he won 4 or 5 of the 5 rounds, maybe. But, I mean, he showed no sense of urgency. I mean, it just felt like a sparring session. It was not the John Jones we were used to that had that killer instinct that was finishing a UFC Hall of Famers left and right with every performance. Like, it just, he looked rusty. He looked off. And then he missed a full year due to positive drug tests. So the John Jones did not look good, and then he missed another full year. So how is he really going to look here? Is he going to have that same killer instinct, or is he going to take some time to kind of work out the kinks in there? Because Daniel Cormier is not going to give him that time. He's going to be really aggressive here. He wants to do damage. Now, one thing that you do have to remember, Cormier has suffered multiple injuries since the last time these guys fought. He's had leg injuries, knee injuries. He's gotten older. He's been hurt in a couple fights. I mean, he had that war with Gustafsson and took a lot of damage in that fight. So, I mean, and he's 38 years old. So I think chin strength, I mean, Cormier's chin is way worse than it used to be. So, if Jones can do some real damage here, he might be able to get a finish there. If Jones can, you know, just push really hard, he might be able to break Cormier again like he did last time. But I mean, that's just all speculation at this point. I'm assuming that John Jones returns to the level that he used to be. And the level he used to be was the best fighter on the planet. I currently have him at, you know, number 3 pound for pound because he just didn't look good the last time we saw him and he's been inactive. But if he can return to form, John Jones shouldn't just win this fight. He should dominate this fight. So I'm going to pick him, but I'm cautious because he did not look good against OSP. And if that version of Jones shows up, there's a possibility he could lose. So my pick is John Jones, but I'm definitely treading water here a little bit, treading cautiously. So that'll do it for our full event breakdown for UFC 214. Now our premium bets will be released this Friday following the weigh-in, so stay tuned for that if you're an MMA Odds Breaker premium member. If we have any free plays to give out, make sure to follow at MMA OB Premium on Twitter because that's where we'll post them first. We can also notify you of our free bets via email alert if you prefer that method. Just send an email to picks@MMAoddsbreaker.com and we'll add you to our free bet mailing list. Special thanks to our sponsor, Five Dime Sportsbook. Good luck, everyone, and hopefully the betting gods are on your side this weekend.